Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your leadership, parenting, or teaching journey. And I'm going to be real with y'all today, right now in this moment. I am tired. It's been a long day. And the days as a helper are different than the days where I'm here just to share the information and here to learn. So to be honest, I told Instagram that I was going to be sharing information about the Chaos to Calm conference, and I really haven't shared anything, and I'll tell you why. And then I'm going to dive into some of the content that we did learn today, some of the things that we did talk about. Now, I'm not going to talk about everything that we talked about. I'm just going to talk about some of the things that I don't hear talked about very often when I come to conferences. And I kind of took notes, because if you want to hear all the things that are always talked about in these conferences, I have probably maybe like 6 or 7 podcast episodes in the past. I listened to the one that I did at the Infant Toddler conference. If you're looking for just kind of the general, but if you're looking for something you haven't heard on this podcast, then keep on listening. I'm going to be stumbling through this podcast. I'm going to be making a lot of oops here, because the reality is I don't have all the resources in my body that I normally would when I'm recording a podcast episode. I'm running on fumes. And right after this, I am going to go to sleep, because I have to wake up again tomorrow morning and be there bright and early to support all the people who are coming in to learn and set everything up and all that good stuff. It's part of what it is of being a helper. Before I do dive into the content, I would like to share a little bit more about the difference and why I was not able to post, or why I chose not to post, or just did not post. As a helper, my focus is more on the people in the room. My focus is gauging and assessing how how they're receiving the information, asking thoughtful questions, thought-provoking questions that get people talking, energized, discussing, coming up with ideas, questions that people have in terms of their individual situation. I'm answering those questions about specific, I'm connecting people to other people who I know have expertise in different areas, or can relate maybe more than what I can to what their experience is, based off of connections that I've made in the past. So this is where I typically go to conferences, and I'm doing a lot of processing the information myself, yes, as I am at this conference, but also my focus is more on sharing the information on the outside, to the internet, to Instagram, to support y'all up there on the interwebs and kind of get this information out to y'all. Not really the case here. The case is here, I'm more focused. I'm taking all that energy and focusing on the people in the room. So I know many of you were hoping, and I was hoping too, that I would be able to post more. But it's just not realistic. It will take away from my actual role, my actual job there. So I'm probably not going to do that very much. I might post some more on Saturday, some kind of recaps and things like that. But anyways, let's dive into the content. It's been long enough. So I'm going to kind of go just by my notes. And so we're going to be bouncing around a little bit. This is going to be a little bit of a smorgasbord of information. The one thing that I feel like is important to talk about first is the process of, and I have heard this at a couple conscious discipline conferences, but the thing I want to talk about first is the process of learning. What is that process? What do the phases look like of learning conscious discipline, of learning connected and collaborative-based practices? And there's like a 3-step process. And I love the way that it was put. And I think it'll be helpful for you if you're hoping to be on this journey, or be on this journey yourself, or you're hoping to support someone else in their journey. Because sometimes we have inappropriate expectations of what others could or should be doing on their journey. So we have a three-step process. The first step is just add on. Learn as much as you can. Add on things to your practice of parenting or of teaching, of leading that that you find helpful. The things that appeal to you most, the things that solve your problems. Focus little by little, just adding things to your practice. You don't even need to take things away. Like, I don't even, and that's part of the reason why I don't even talk much about things. Like, well, there's a lot of reasons I don't talk about timeout. One, because not everyone has the same language or means the same thing when they're saying timeout. And I have a whole podcast episode with Tina Payne Bryson about timeouts. Probably one of my favorite podcasts that I've done. So definitely check that out. I think it's called Timeouts with Tina Payne Bryson on this podcast. But just adding things on to your practice is the first step. And then once you start to realize that you don't really need the fear and control-based practices anymore. You don't have to lean on them as much anymore because you've got all these other skills and tools that you're using and you're recognizing how impactful and effective it is. Step two is when we start removing all of kind of like the old ways, right? The traditional methods of guiding and raising and teaching children, right? We start peeling those layers away as we're still adding on more skills. And as we remove those old ways, you're going to probably even see more need for those skills. Like, oh, I need to keep on learning. I need to continue my path. And then the third step is you're doing it with consistency. And that doesn't mean you're doing it perfectly. That doesn't mean you're doing it 100% of the time. It means that you are at the point where you can implement it yourself and probably start teaching or start sharing and start teaching others. At this point, it may not be automatic for you yet. It does take more time, but that's really more the process. A lot of times we dive in, we find out about it. You know, you find out about all this information and you recognize, you're like, oh my goodness, what I've been doing to my kid all this time. Like, I've ruined my kid. I need to completely change everything tomorrow. And that's stressful. And that tends to not be very helpful in itself because there's so much growth and there's so much growth that needs to happen and growth takes time. It's just a reality. Like, we don't grow as fast as we would like to. And it can be very frustrating when you see the light at the end of the tunnel. You hear other people's successes who've been on the journey for longer than you. And you want to be there right now, today, right this instant. And it can be hard to wait. It can be hard to be patient and to keep working at it and be persistent and to persevere. 100% super difficult to do. And as you do it, you will see the rewards, you will see the benefit, and the person that you were years ago will almost be recognizable. You might hear a recording of yourself years ago and be like, oh my goodness, that was me. That's kind of embarrassing. And that's just a sign that you've grown, right? That you've taken your oops or opportunity to problem solve. And you've taken those moments to problem solve. Now, there's another act. So there's a different act. So OOPS is always, you know, I've talked about OOPS stands for our opportunity to problem solve. But actually, I heard a different acronym for OOPS too that works just as well. If you know, look back or just you hear the recordings and you're a little embarrassed about how you sounded a few years ago, it just means that you had a lot of OOPS and you took advantage of those OOPS, which OOPS could also stand for our opportunity to practice skills. You took those opportunities and you're like, I think this is an opportunity for me to improve my skills. And you did so. And you kept on doing that process of learning, of trying, of reflecting, learning more off of that reflection and then coming back in with new information and trying and practicing and implementing and reflecting and then going back and learning from that reflection and then coming back again. That is the process of growth. So I thought these three steps will be really helpful for a lot of people to kind of reframe this process of this journey, as opposed to you got to change everything just because now that you know better, you have to 100% do better all the time. And I say that once you know better, you have an opportunity to do better. Once you know better, you won't necessarily do better. It's just an opportunity that you can choose to take advantage of or not take advantage of. Plenty of people do know better and choose not to do better. And it could be for a lot of reasons. It could be for, I just don't have the resources in my body to give you 100% and to do the person and be the person that I know that you need. I need to be, you know, and that's also an opportunity to problem solve, right? Like, how are we filling our own resources, right? How are we regulating ourselves? How are we creating a routine, an environment, a system that allows us to be in a place to choose better, to choose to do the thing that we know would actually be most helpful here. And by the way, the master instructor for this one is Kim Hughes. And so some of these things come directly from her. She was talking about how research tells us that, am I going to get hiccups again? I hope not. This is all real. I'm not re-recording this. It's late. We doing this. You're here with me. Research tells us that kids stop paying attention when the teacher repeats what the child says. So if the child says, did Christopher Columbus discover America? And the teacher responds, oh, so Cameron asked, did Christopher Columbus discover America? In that time where the teacher is saying, oh, so Cameron asked, did Christopher Columbus discover America? In that time, the kids start tuning out, right? And the kids stop paying attention and they lose focus. So that is just a pretty interesting, helpful note there. Also interesting thing, and there's lots of, I'm not going to go deep into this. Maybe for another podcast episode. If you want to learn more about it, I've honestly been trying to get Kim Hughes on the podcast. But it might not be, maybe this is the time to have her on, but we'll see. But fluid readers are ones that take risks. And like really what behind this is that like to take the risk to try and to, you know, give up, and that vulnerability allows for you to grow a skill, to grow in that skill a lot. When you feel safe enough to take risk, you will grow. It's kind of like the whole tightrope thing, right? Like you won't learn to walk on a tightrope without a safety net underneath you, right? You're not. You're not going to take the risk to practice enough to try. Now, when the safety net is underneath, you'll practice all day. You'll become a pro. But no one would be a pro tightrope walker if there were no safety nets. So that was helpful once. Another one is when you stand up, 11 and 20%, you get smarter. Right. I don't want to mess up this quote because she was like quoting research and I don't want to say it in a way where it's not particular, but really you significantly, when you stand up, it increases the blood flow to your brain. I want to say 11 to 20%. Don't quote me on that. That's what I heard. Talk to Kim Hughes about it if you don't agree, but 11 to 20% of the, your blood goes up to your brain when you stand up. Really the thing that is important to know here, and the reason why that's important, is that standing up and moving can be very helpful for learning. It lends itself to learning. We want children to sit down and sit down and sit down, sit down. Why are you getting up? Always tell them to sit down. We really should be creating more spaces and more opportunities for children to be able to stand and learn, to move and learn, and incorporate that into the learning. I mean, even today at the conference, and I'm engaged, I love this, and I'm all in the conscious. I'm all in the conscious discipline. I'm interested. I want to learn. But after like 20, 30 minutes, my ADHD says move around. I start getting antsy in my chair and in my seat. And when I'm talking, when I'm teaching, and I see the same thing in kids, when I'm teaching kids. Like, I'm after talking, you know, to the five-year-old for 5 minutes, you start to see the body. Like, if you've been in a classroom, if you've been teaching, you can see their bodies. You know what I'm talking about. Not even in a classroom, but just even as a parent. You know what I'm talking about when you see their bodies, like, just getting like, okay, like, I need to move, I need to do something. I know you're expecting me to sit down, but my body is telling me something different. We need to create more opportunities for children to be able to stand up and move in their learning. Another interesting thing. She was talking about autistic children, and we were talking about connection, and she was talking about how she tends to, you know, kind of keep all the autistic kids might be on her peripherals because the eye contact doesn't vibe with them as much, right? It's not as comfortable for them as it might be for a neurotypical child. So she will kind of work with them and sometimes be in the peripherals. But I will also say too, I've worked with many autistic kids, and while I, you know, never forced eye contact, there are many in a lot of connection moments after building connection with the autistic kids, they tend to be, they give more eye contact than what you might think and be more comfortable with eye contact than when it's a stranger or it's a more uncomfortable situation. When it is a connecting time, the eye contact seems to be more comfortable with the autistic kids that I've worked with. And maybe not for as long as the neurotypical child, and maybe, but it's not to say that like an autistic person or an autistic child will never make eye contact with you. Elizabeth Cephalo said, you know, we talk about how children are, sometimes they're relationship resistant. They're resistant to relationships, but she kind of shifted that into, which, you know, I now use and I would encourage you to use too, that some children are just relationship selective, right? They might be a little bit more selective than other kids about that relationship, and I found that to be more true than relationship resistance. And what comes to mind is those autistic children who have really built a connection with, and who really feel safe with me, will engage with me in ways that they don't engage with other leaders in their life, other teachers who they may not feel as safe with. So that's just something to keep in mind as we talk about under the eye contact and autism. It's always a big thing. Whenever we talk about the four components of connection, eye contact, touch, a playful situation, and presence, the whole thing, well, but my kid's autistic. What do you, like, how do I do this with an autistic? And you never force an eye contact, never force connection, right? It's always a choice. So that's what I'll say on that. Again, with the sitting down, no one can sit and get, right? The whole sit and get this information, it's not the best learning strategy or best teaching strategy inside. You can learn that way. Kudos to you. You can just sit and get all day. Great to you. You probably did really well in school, in a traditional school setting. And applaud you. Shout out to you. No ill will or whatever. But I just know that's not me. So you got to know yourself. And I know there are a lot of other people out there like me. In terms of regulation, like, everyone regulates their own way. The way I talk about it is everyone has their own kind of regulation style. Yeah, short breathing is helpful. But, you know, I had a kid who when she was overwhelmed and had big emotions, she would be doing a lot of writing. She would be doing, she'd take it out the whiteboard and she would write down whatever she was feeling. And that was the regulating activity for her. There was another, Kim Hughes was talking about another student who a regulating activity for him was stapling papers. And she kind of set up a little area for him, and he can, whenever he needs to regulate, he can go get his little papers and he can staple along. So just, I mean, it's okay to think outside the box. If they say something will regulate them, then give it a shot. Give it a shot. Try it. And if you know anything about regulation, you'll be able to kind of like, if they're like, I need my iPad to regulate, then that may not be a choice. I would not encourage that choice for regulation, but I would, if I would say that on that note, I would say that the iPad might be more for the adult to regulate, to take some time to regulate, maybe that 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes, the adult is taking time to regulate so that they can show up for their child for the rest of the day. That is the one way I can think of that the iPad can be regulating. And just, I hope you regulate enough on that break, because that, you know, that transition off might be a challenge. Or transition off the iPad might be a challenge. Oh, another one that was interesting. Teaching whispering, right? I've always kind of talked about, like, you know, you got to teach kids to whisper. They don't automatically know, and it's often hard for them to regulate their voice to whisper. I learned a new tip today about teaching children to whisper, and just taking three fingers, putting it on your throat, right? And so do this with me. Take three fingers and say, "What's my name, Mr. Chaz? What's my name, Mr. Chaz?" Okay, now we're going to whisper. "What's my name, Mr. Chaz? What's my name, Mr. Chaz? What's my name, Mr. Chaz? Mr. Chaz, Mr. Chaz." So you can, if you do that, you can feel the difference. And so it's another way to teach the child. And children are really learning through their senses. They take in the world through their senses. So to be able to create another way for them to take in information using the senses, the sense of like being able to feel the vibration of the throat, is another just helpful way to teach a skill that I'm sure, especially if you have like, you know, you have a 3-year-old, but you have the baby too, you want them to know what's because the baby's sleeping. That can be something that can be helpful. We did talk a lot about wishing well, but I don't think that I'm going to talk about that here today. We talked about fear-based versus love-based. We have a tendency to use, I mean, we grew up with fear-based strategies, but we are going to infiltrate the world with love-based strategies and create households, classrooms, communities, eventually a world that is more love-based than fear-based. We're not there yet. Clearly, you can look around, you can know that, but everyone here, you're listening to the podcast, everyone in that room with us, we're on that mission to make that push. And it works. And the content discipline works with everyone from infants to in-laws. So use it, right? This is a very much adult-first program. Very much use it for yourself. And if you want to learn more, I would like, if you're maybe listening to this, you might be new to the podcast, and maybe you really actually want to know what it would be like to, or like what information you get at a conscious discipline, like a full conscious discipline conference. Go back in my podcast and I'm going to tell you exactly which one to listen to. So I'll give you the date so it's easy for you to find. September 26, 2023. is when I'd had to do like a 3-part series. Well, really it's a 4-part series, but you'll have to skip an episode because I did a behavior charts episode with Greg Santucci in the middle. But at least listen to the 3 parts. And it starts on September 26th and it's called The Brain States and Conscious Discipline with Mr. Chess, part 1. So check that out if you really want to get a more full view of what conscious discipline is, because in those, I really do break it down. I break down the brain states, I break down skills and the powers. We talk about mental models, we talk about attachment, we talk about visuals. There's a lot in there. And even those, the 3 parts still only scratches the surface, to be honest. But it will give you much greater foundation than what I'm going to give you in this episode. And actually, I'm ending the episode right now. So check that out. Some nugget in here has been helpful. I know it's pretty fragmented, but I know that there's a nugget or two that came in there that helped. And an update from last time, I actually did the 2 things of the teaching my table, the palm to the sky. They enjoyed that lesson, that little mini lesson that I did with them. And they also enjoyed the little lesson that I did with the one box of candy was open and one box of candy was closed. And if you want to understand why I did that, listen to the last episode. So that went really well. And that was impactful for them. And they seemed like they really enjoyed it. And they really cemented the learning for them. I talked about yesterday, am I going to be speaking? Am I going to be speaking at this one? And I kind of was like, I want other people to speak. But I was talking to the master instructor, Kim Hughes. And she said that she was going to use one of my videos from online to share. And I was like, to be honest, I would rather. I had to use my assertive voice. Now, this is one of those things where it's like using the conscious discipline skills in real life. So the master instructor said, I didn't even know that she was even going to include me in it at all. Grateful that she was including me. I'm going to use one of your videos. She said you're going to use the video of the child pouring out the water, that video on Instagram. Check that one out. It's a good one. And okay, yeah, that's great. But I also told her, like, honestly, if I had a choice, I would rather speak than you show my video if it's like a one or the other. And it felt like there was a little bit of that like mental model of like, am I taking up too much space? Should I make myself smaller? Kind of thing, like those are kind of the things that, you know, you still struggle with. You know, the mental models that you grow up with, they never really leave you forever permanently. You just pack on some other mental models to kind of drown out the old CD-ROM, the old songs that are playing in your brain. So I'm like, I need to use my assertive voice because this is really how I feel. And if I don't speak up, then I'm going to have resentment, right? And it's really, I'll have no one to blame but myself. If I speak up and she says no, I won't feel any regrets, you know, like, then I can blame her. I'm just kidding. She can choose. Like, I really don't. It's one of those things where, like, you know, consciously, I'm like, I'm not trying to control her decision. I'm not trying to make her do anything. I'm just letting her know where my heart is and allow her to make a choice from there. And based off of her choice, then I will, you know, I'll see it and I'll be able to make a choice myself. And so this is one of the moments where it's like, okay, instead of falling to the passive and letting my mental models get the best of me, let me speak up and use my assertive voice. And she said that she's very open for me to do that. And it might be a case where I'm speaking and she's still using my video. So my assumption, I guess, she probably still wanted to use my video. And she's allowing me to speak. She probably already had something planned for that. My guess. I don't know. She might listen to this and be like, that is not why I did that. I'm going to have a talk with you. I'm going to get a stern email. I'm just kidding. I don't think I'd get a stern email, but hopefully I can bring her on the podcast. So that went really well. And tomorrow I will give you an update, see if I spoke, and I have a story to share. I don't share, there's some stories that I do share for speaking because I don't want people to like hear me over and over again and it'd be repetitive, but I might share the story that I'm going to share. If she allows me to share it in the session, I will share it in the podcast. If she doesn't allow me to share it in the session, or there's no time, or whatever happens, the way things go, the way things go, then I will not share it, and you'll just have to come to my real life speaking of it. I don't know. But we'll see what happens. I'm on the edge of my seat to know what happens, and you might be too. But I'm going to end it right here. Nice being with you today. I'm glad that I was able to do this and be able to keep up with my commitment, because honestly, I did not know. But it's time for me to go to sleep because I got to wake up early in the morning tomorrow. So, goodbye. Love y'all. Good night. Peace.